ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं जयामः नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयामुदीरये नास्तप्रेष भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया। भगवतितम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी ताराजस्तमो भाव कामलोभादयश्चे चेतायतायरनाभिधं सित्रं सत्वे प्रसीदति। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 15th chapter, Description of Mystic Yoga Perfections, text number 33. Yes, today
is 33.
Antarayan
Vadanti
Eta
Yunjato
Yogam
Uttamam
Maya
Sampadyamanasya
Kala
Shapana
Etava Antarayan
Vadantyeta
Yunjato Yogamuttamam
Maya Sampadyamanasya
Kalakshapanahetava Antarayan
Impediments
Vadanti,
they say,
Etaha,
these mystic perfections,
Yunjataha,
of one engaging in,
Yogam,
connection with the Absolute,
Uttamam,
the supreme stage,
Maya,
with me.
Sampadyamanasya.
One who is becoming completely opulent.
Kala.
Of time.
Shapana.
Of the interruption.
Waste.
Hetavaha.
Causes.
Translation.
Learned experts in devotional service state that the mystic perfections of yoga that I've mentioned are actually impediments and are a waste of time for one who is practicing the supreme yoga, by which one achieves all perfection in life directly from me. Purport. It is common sense that whatever is a useless waste of time should be given up. Therefore, one should not pray to God for mystic yoga perfections. For a pure devotee who has no material desires, even impersonal liberation, is a useless disturbance in his life. And what to speak of the material perfections of yoga, which cannot even be compared to impersonal liberation? Such mystic perfections may be wonderful for an immature and an inexperienced person, but they are not impressive for a learned man who has understood the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Simply by obtaining Lord Krishna, one dwells within an infinite ocean of mystic opulences. Therefore, he should not waste precious time pursuing separate mystic perfections.
Antarayan Vadantyeta Yunjato Yogamuttamam Maya Sampatyamanasya Kalakshapanahetava.
Learned experts in devotional service state that the mystic perfections of yoga that I've mentioned are actually impediments and are a waste of time for one who is practicing the supreme yoga, by which one achieves all perfection in life directly from me. Oma Ganatimarandasya Gananjana Sharavakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupam Kadamayam Dadati Svapatantikam Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
It is stated here that it is common sense that whatever is a useless waste of time should be given up. Now, in the age of Kali, there is nothing as uncommon as common sense. It is something which is very rarely found. And we have found many times, even in our own lives, that we've engaged in activities which were a useless waste of time. Or even they were harmful. And we knew that they were harmful. But we just simply were too attached and we couldn't give it up. So, that is the very unfortunate situation of the living entity in this age of Kali, that manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya hyupadruta. We are short-lived, we are less intelligent, we are very quarrelsome, and we tend to do the wrong thing. The mass of the people usually tend to do the wrong thing. If you study history, especially in Kali Yuga, the mass of the people, they have always done the wrong thing. So if you do the opposite of what everybody else does, you're more closer to the truth, most likely. Because most of the people, they're going in the wrong direction. So you can't just follow everybody else, because you'll be following a lot of blind people. And when you follow blind people, you end up in a ditch, and you break your bones. Just like you go into the street and you ask anybody, which tram should I take to go to St. Kilda? Yesterday I had that experience. And already I knew, but I just wanted to make the test. And I asked three people, and they all said, oh, you go over there, and then you take that one, or you go over there, then you take that one. And everybody was very learned and very knowledgeable. But I knew, because I had heard from authority. I had heard from the acharyas, from our Sankirtan devotees. They told me, you go to this platform, you take 112, and it will take you right. Right to the temple. So, we have to listen to authority. We cannot listen to Tom, Dick and Harry on the street who have their own opinion on how it should work, how it could work, or maybe perhaps it will work. A devotee is always guided by three principles. They are Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Just like in your cars, you have navigation system. Unless you're driving a Lada or a Maruti or something. But usually you have navigation system, right? And in order for the navigation system to be accurate, you need, I've heard from authority, from some of our learned engineers, you need three satellites in order to define an exact location. So if you want to know where you're standing right now, you have to know from three authorized points of reference. So the three satellites, they define where is that accurate position. It's like you see a big map. What's the first thing you want to find out? Where am I? There's this big red dot. You are here. Right? Before you make any move, when you go into a park or into a zoo or anywhere, right? With your kids or with your friends, and you have the map, and you first got to make heads and tail, you know? And then you got to figure out, where am I? The red dot. You are here. So that's the first thing we have to do in spiritual life. Atato brahma jigyasa. We have to inquire about our true nature. Who am I? Kayami. And what am I meant to do? And we have to follow these three satellites, Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Then our life will be very safe. But if we're following the newspaper, the TV, and our neighbor next door, who's a very nice old lady who works her dog, you know, and has a lot of experience in life. But most likely,
you will not end up where you want to go. Now, of course, most people, they don't have a clear objective. So if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Any road will take you there if you don't have a clue where you want to go. You just want to, you know, experience existence. That is the Mayavadi's problem. That for them, happiness means absence of pain. If they're not in a very troublesome situation, then they're happy. If everything's fine. But if I tell you, you work hard, and at the end of the month, your bank balance is zero, will you be very motivated to work for me? Now, of course, nowadays in Kali Yuga, if you just break even, that is quite spectacular. Because many people are working very hard. But, you know, I was walking a person to the ATM the other day in Auckland, and he said, "Hey, my account is $380 in minus. I've worked hard all week, and I'm almost $400 in minus. Is that my, you know, reward for all this hard work?" But what had happened is his rent was deducted, but his salary had not yet been, you know, added to his account. So he could not take the book. He was in a very unfortunate position. So the point is, the Mayavadi thinks, "Oh, I'm on zero. I'm on existence. I'm on no suffering." But if I tell you, you work very hard and then you have no suffering, you think that's very smart? That's very intelligent? No. You want to have something positive, right? Just like many times in our lives, we want to define our existence by what we are against, you know? Like I can tell you, I'm against cucumbers and capsicum and chili and this and that. But that doesn't tell you what I like, right? So just because you are against somebody or something, that doesn't make you anything. But we are very proud and making big talks about what we are against. But that doesn't define who we are. That doesn't say anything about our quality. Except that we are very critical, we have a lot of dislikes, we are very grumpy. And we are most likely not that much fun to be around with. That's the impression, what people can get. "Oh, this person is a very troublesome, very difficult person. I don't want to be around this person." That's the impression, the image we're giving. So Guru, Sadhu and Shastra are the three spiritual satellites which are giving us the correct signal. But if we are hiding in the tunnel, in the underground, if you're going subterranean, you know, under the earth, then the signal will not reach. Signal is lost. And you won't know where to go. So we have to always keep ourselves connected with Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Now you might say, "I don't have a Guru, I'm not initiated yet." But Srila Prabhupada, he's the Guru, the founder Acharya, the Param Guru, for all of us. So it is not because you have not taken initiation that it is not so binding, you know. It is not so pressing, it is not so urgent. Like you might be in a school or in a company. If you want to achieve the desired objective, you have to actually dedicate yourself to the process. Otherwise, the result is questionable. Just like at the end of the month, right? You want to see those numbers in your account. Or even at the end of the week. Here you do weekly, right? Everybody gets weekly salary. Right? So, everybody wants to see what is the fruit. Phalena parichiyate. What is the fruit? What is the result? If the result is not there, then what happens? Loss of faith. Faith is lost. "Oh, I don't think this company is very good. I don't think this boss is very good. Why? He's not giving me the money. He's not treating me properly." Now, that is the material objective. In the spiritual objective, what is a devotee praying? Ayinanda tanuche kinkaram patitang maam vishyami bhavam budau kripaya tavata parang para para pankacha Tidhaguli sadrishim sadrisham vichintaya. That Krishna, you may be absent, you may make me broken hearted, you may reject me, you may throw me away, but still, I am your dedicated servant, birth after birth, no matter what comes. We are not fair weather devotees. We are not just here when the festival is on and the flags are out and everybody has nice dress, huh? And everybody's doing very festive occasions. No. Our faith should be so strong that we are also here for the night papadam shift, or for the kitchen cleanup. Like last night, I woke up at 10:30 and I wondered, what's going on? Why is it so loud in this building? And then I figured, oh, it must be the night papadam shift, you know, or the cleanup crew who is doing their job. And that made me go back to sleep very peacefully and happily. Because first I thought, you know, what is it? Is there some youth program or somebody who has a lot of energy who's running around? But then I thought, no. Like when you're young and foolish, you know, you think, oh, I can stay up all night and let's do this. I'm not tired. I can carry on. No problem. I can sleep in class. Everything's fine. But once you get a little bit older, you cannot do those things. You have to go early to bed, early to rise. Otherwise, you will pay dearly. But still, we think in our foolish spirit, oh no, I don't need to follow this. I can do whatever I like. Just like if you have a car, what happens if you turn the ignition and then you push your gas and you accelerate a lot? What happens? Your car gets, the engine gets flooded. And you won't be able to start and function properly. Oh, we're doing the same thing. We're taking in material information, overload, like you go into the city and you're bombarded with a million informations. Look at this, buy this, drink this, drive this, right? It's constant bombardment. And then you go up to somebody and say, my dear sir, have a look at this. And he's like, why are you canvassing for your religion? Why are you trying to push this on people? And I say, man, look around you. Wake up. Have you watched the news lately? Have you seen the billboards? Have you seen people walking around? It's pretty loud out here. Everybody is doing their thing. Everybody is doing their marketing, right? The small baby, right from the moment it gets out from the womb, bah! Here I am. Give me attention. Give me food. Right? It is not, you know, maybe perhaps if you have some time, mother, if you would like, you know, if you get around to it after you've done what you want to do, then maybe, you know, if it's not too much trouble, just if you think it would be a good thing to do, I would like a little milk, you know. No. The baby goes, you know how the baby goes, you know. We have all done it and we have all experienced it. And in the same way, everybody is, I want, I want, I want, I want. But that is very selfish and that is very short-sighted. But if you want to be smart, if you want to be intelligent, then we have to see what is for my actual benefit. What is for my actual eternal benefit. So even though you try to explain to this person, my dear sir, my dear lady, look around you. Everything is pretty loud. And the most calm, the most peaceful person you would find here is me trying to show you this book. But then that person gets very loud and agitated and angry and tries to tell you how much you are disturbing his peace. And I told that man, I have asked you twice very nicely to have a look at this book. Now you have asked me five times, not very nicely, to please get lost. Now I'm asking you, who is aggressive here? Who is patronizing? But the living entity, because of foolishness, because of being absorbed in material activity, he doesn't recognize. He cannot, no proper sense of judgment, no common sense. It is not present. So the point we're trying to make here, the point of this class, is what creates faith and what destroys faith. Because a person who has faith in the process of bhakti yoga is not hankering after mystic perfections, is not hankering for impersonal liberation, is not even hankering for material perfections. Not because
That person knows that through the performance of bhakti yoga, all auspiciousness is achieved and I will get whatever I require. But because a devotee wants to give pleasure to Krishna. And so much so, that even if giving pleasure to Krishna means a little inconvenience on my own part, I'm ready to see that little inconvenience, the difficulties which arise in the performance of my devotional service, they are my joys. They are my relished treasures. Now, do we see like that? Huh? Or do we think, oh no, another kitchen cleanup? Oh no, another Papadam shift? Oh no, another 2-hour Harinam, you know? Why does this go on forever? Huh? Why don't we just hire some billboards, you know? Huh? Or some time on the radio or on the TV. Why? Because we need to engage in devotional service. We need this. This is our birthright. To perform devotional service is our birthright. So Krishna has given us the chance to engage in devotional service. So we should never take this lightly. We should see this as a great blessing, as a great boon, as a great opportunity. So when you see devotees who are extending themselves beyond the call of duty, your faith gets increased. Now faith is a very, very crucial and a very rare commodity in the performance of devotional service. Who can think of a verse which has faith in it? Shraddha. Shraddha shabde vishwas kohe sudri dranishchoi. Sarva karma kritahoi. Translation, please. Anybody? Pandits? We're missing our Panditji. He's probably... So, you know the meaning. By the performance of determined, steady devotional service, faith arises in the heart. Now, what is the difference between a person who is inspired in devotional service and a person who is not inspired? It is faith. It is faith in the process. It's like the people, when you have said your thing, your 2 minutes or your 20 seconds presentations about, yeah, this is this and that and the other thing. Then the people look at you. Do you really believe what you're saying here? Are you really sure this is true? Do you have faith in what you're doing here? Right? And then when you go like, well, I don't know, you know. I just tell you what they told me, you know. I mean, that's what they say, you know. It sounds good. It sells a lot, you know. I mean, this is the hottest selling item, right? But faith is not a commodity which you can purchase by money. But it is something rare, something extraordinary. So, what creates faith? When we see other devotees engage themselves in devotional service and extend themselves beyond the call of duty. Doing those extra hours. Covering somebody else's service shift. Just like here, you have a few brahmacharis. It's a rare commodity in Kali Yuga to have brahmacharis. So you should value it, you should treasure it. And you should appreciate it. Now if you want the brahmacharis to be brahmacharis, then there's a few different things you have to do. First of all, you have to respect them, you have to give them some space so they can actually breathe and exist, you know. And then, second of all, if they want to go out on preaching and on book distribution, then if you can't do the preaching and the book distribution, maybe you cover some of their services. And you cover their kitchen shift or their puja. And in this way they get freed up to do the preaching. So the point is, faith is like a plant. And if we want that plant to grow nicely, we have to give it the space and the protection and the nourishment it requires in order to fructify nicely. Now I'm doing gardening in Mayapur. And the beginning of every plant is a very crucial stage. From when you have the seed-like state till the plant is actually in the ground and has gotten roots. It's a very crucial time. So many things can go wrong. So initially, our faith is very tender. It is very delicate. So when a person comes here and gets some bad experience or some bad treatment, then that faith is crushed. And it may take a long time for that faith again to come back. So we have to be very careful.
in how we deal, not just with new people, but with everybody. Because every time we don't act in a Vaishnava way, we don't act in an exemplary way, then faith is decreased. That person goes more inside, withdraws more, becomes more cynical, or more cold, or more distanced. And the more we see devotees in a loving and sharing and supportive atmosphere, helping each other, encouraging each other, counseling each other, helping each other in Krishna consciousness to advance nicely, the more our faith grows. Just like you may have a tree. That tree may have taken 1,000 years to grow. You can cut it down with one of those modern chainsaws in a few minutes. In a few minutes, that tree is gone. So, what creates faith? By hearing from the authorities, from the Vedic scriptures, our faith is awakened. By seeing other devotees' example, how they are doing nicely in devotional service. That means we have to associate with other devotees. Because otherwise, if we only associate with our own grumpy self, then we think, like the materialist, when you go into the city, oh, dog-eat-dog society, huh? Everybody just wants money, wants this, wants to get all the things. But if we associate with other people who are selfless, who are kind, who are loving, who are giving themselves, then we see, hey, there is people on this planet, they live on a different principle. They have a different value structure. They try to achieve something different. That's why we need to associate with Vaishnavas. Because Vaishnavas are very kind, they're very loving, and they have great faith in the mercy of other Vaishnavas. Just like Kalidas. In the time of Lord Chaitanya, there was a Vaishnava in Bengal, his name was Kalidas. He had great faith in the mercy of the Vaishnavas, especially in their Maha Maha Prasad. So, he gave gifts of nice prasad to all the Vaishnavas, and then he would cherish their remnants. Sometimes he would get them freely, sometimes he would hide to get them. But he was having great faith in the nectar, in the mercy of the Mahaprasada, the Vaishnavas. So much so that it is said that he relished the remnants of each and every Vaishnava in Bengal. Now 500 years ago in the time of Lord Chaitanya, there was a lot of Vaishnavas in Bengal. A lot of Vaishnavas. There was hundreds of thousands of Vaishnavas. And it is stated that he got the Mahamahaprasadam of each and every Vaishnava in Bengal. One time, he went to the house of a Vaishnava who was coming from a lower caste family, born in Shudra family, so he knew that that Vaishnava would not give him his remnants because he is himself a Brahmin. So this person coming from Shudra caste, he will not give him the remnants of his food. There's no way he will do that. So he gave him nice mango prasad. And then he went and was hiding in the bushes. And then later on, when that person's wife had thrown out the pits and the skin into the refuse area where the garbage is kept, he sneaked out and he got that Maha Maha prasad. And he was feeling very happy. So much faith he had that when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Puri, his place in front of Jagannath temple where people wash their feet, because that is the tradition. So Lord Chaitanya, as a sannyasi, is following very strictly all these traditions. So his servant Govinda and Kashishwar were very, very strong. He would walk in front of Lord Chaitanya to part the crowds. And Govinda would help him wash his feet. And the rule was of Lord Chaitanya, the direct instruction, let nobody touch the water which has washed my feet. Because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was acting as a sannyasi in a very humble way. He didn't say, yeah, this is the mercy. Let everybody get the mercy freely. He said, not anybody should touch that water. But Kalidas, when Kalidas was there in Puri, right in front of Mahaprabhu. Nobody dared to go near that water, to even look at that water. Everybody was so afraid that Lord Chaitanya, when he gets angry, he will burn me. So they all stayed in respectful distance. But Kalidas, he had such great faith that he simply went there because he was simple hearted. He was pure hearted. He simply went there and he put his palms on the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. And the water that had washed the Lord's feet, it went in his palms and he drank it. And he put his hands back and he took a second palmful. Not just a few drops on the head, you know. Oh, okay, I'm being respectful here, you know. And like that. No. He took a third palmful and drank it to his heart's satisfaction, to his full content. And when he wanted to go for the fourth time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu looked at him and said, "This is enough." Three times is enough. And he smiled and he went into the temple. Why? Because he knew that this devotee, Kalidas, was non-envious. He had taken the Mahaprasad, the remnants of all the Vaishnavas of Bengal. And that's why he got Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Mahaprasad. Huh? So, his faith was very strong. So we all want to get that strong faith, because it will enable us to get the mercy of Mahaprabhu. But at the same time, we are daily doing activities which are diminishing our faith. Huh? It is not necessary that you take out the chainsaw of Hatimata, of offending other Vaishnavas, and you cut down that bhakti lata, or you trample it like an elephant. But you can also, at the same time, when you're trying to start your fire, you can pour water on it. Just like everybody knows from doing puja, like this morning I had to find out again the hard way, that if your match is wet, or your matchbox is wet, the fire will not light. Now you don't have to be an engineer. You don't have to have a PhD, right? You can be in, you know, second grade, and you know that, right? It makes sense, doesn't it? What happens? Nothing happens. It just goes, and you can flick it and do it in, you know, all your expert ways, and it just won't start. It's the same match, the same matchbox. But you add water to the equation, and it's not going to happen. So, but we're doing the same thing. We're trying to start a fire of enthusiasm, and we're pouring water of sense gratification. And we're flooding it. Now the body needs some sense gratification. If you don't feed your body, you don't treat your body properly, it will break down and it will just perish. So it needs some basic facility for subsistence. But just like when I went to Mayapur for the first few times, I was a young bhakta, young brahmachari, very enthusiastic. And I thought, let's eat as much Mahaprasadam as possible. But in Mayapur, they have these tremendously gorgeous and delicious cakes in the evening, which are quite dangerous. Because if you take a little piece, it's all right. But if you take a few slices because you want to try all the different ones, then you might have trouble getting up the next morning. And you might feel that strange feeling, you know, of not feeling so well. No, no, Prabhu, no breakfast for me. I'm very renounced, you know, half day fast today. Huh? Because you get that burp of, you know that taste of that burp, you know. No need to describe here. We have all experienced. So we are all graduates. We all have a BA or an MA in the School of Hard Knocks. Some of us even PhD. Now it is alright to make mistakes. It is okay. But don't make the same mistake more than a dozen times. Because that really looks stupid, right? It looks kind of foolish. But we're still trying to do the same thing. And we think we're going to get away with it. Nobody's going to catch us. Huh? It's like I had one young lady from Bombay yesterday with her dad. And they were here in Melbourne for visiting relatives and shopping. And she was typical, arrogant, proud, you know, successful, educated. I'm making my money. I'm enjoying my life. What is this thing here? What is this going to help me? Person. Totally indifferent. But her dad, he was a bit more respectful, so he gave a donation. She said, "Oh, I don't believe in this." I said, "But you believe in good energy, don't you? You know, you're reading all the magazines, Vastu, Feng Shui, what type of curtains, what type of pillow covers, what type of flower arrangements. You believe in good energy, right? Bhagavad Gita is good energy. You believe in beauty, right? You're spending so much money, so much time to do yourself up. So if you just look at Krishna and you just study his life, you will find beauty, you will find good energy, you will find strength, you'll find everything." She said, "Oh, all right, okay, I'll read it." And she went off. And then I spoke with her dad, and we were both shaking our heads. And I said, "You know, why is she not getting it?" And he said, "You know, she hasn't gotten enough bumps in her head yet." You have to get sufficiently bumped in the head. Then you will be more smart. Then you will know better. And he was laughing like that. And he was holding Gita and reading, and she went off shopping like that. So, we should see that our faith is protected. And when we have things which are destroying our faith, asatsanga, association with materialistically minded people, people who are criticizing, who are fault-finding, who are trying to destroy, to ruin your creeper of devotional service, you have to fend your plant, your creeper, against them. That's the first thing you do. In fact, in India, even before you do anything with the land, is you build a wall, right? You drive past the countryside, and there is a wall with a barren piece of land, right? And you think, why did they put, you know, this wall? So nobody goes there. So whatever, you're going to build a building, or you're going to grow something like that. Now, as Vaishnavs, amongst Vaishnavs, we shouldn't have the philosophy that good fences make good neighbors. You know, you're okay, I'm okay, like that. No. But we should be very open, very open-hearted. Because in this way we will receive the mercy of the Vaishnavas. So there are so many things which are destroying faith. What is that verse? The Prajalpa Niyamagraha verse? How does it start? Atyahara Prayasascha Prajalpa Niyamagraha Janasangas Chalodyam Cha Shaktir Bhaktir Vinashati. Rupa Goswami is describing the six kind of activities which are destroying faith and devotional service. An association with materialists is one of them. Now we might say, I have a job, I have work, I have my profession. That is all right. But the question is, are you giving association or are you taking association? Just like when we say we're doing preaching, we're doing bridge preaching, you know, we have the bridge. That's nice. But the question is, are you going on the other side of that bridge to hang out with those people? Or do you go over that bridge to get people to come on this side of the bridge to associate with Krishna consciousness? That's the question. So are we building bridges so we can have nice association with Maya? Or are we building bridges so we can go out and share the nectar of Krishna consciousness? So, now a devotee who is extending himself beyond the call of duty, just like this example of Kalidas is here, and there are so many other examples, and I like to just shortly remember one in my own personal life. One time again, I was a young brahmachari, I was very foolish, and it was just before the Prabhupada marathon in November, and it was one fruit, which is from southern Sicily, very much from the south in Europe. So what happens is, if in winter time you eat fruits from a southern climate, is your body thinks that it's summertime. And you can get a cold very easily. So, I ate a lot of those fruits because they were very nice. And the next day, I was down with a terrible fever. And I was at the temple, and it was just the weekend before the Prabhupada marathon started. And I was very much in anxiety because we had big competition in those days. And if you just miss a day, it means maybe you're off the race, you know. So, I was very upset with myself and a little bit with these fruits also. So, anyhow, but Rohini Sura Prabhu, who was our Sankirtan leader and our well-wisher, he said that, I have read in Srimad Bhagavatam 5th canto that if a healthy person takes water and he splashes it on a person who is sick, that person's fever will go down. It's there in 5th canto. Prabhupada explains. So, he had me strip to my copins. I was laying on the ground and he was taking cups of water and gargling and splashing it all over me. And everybody was having big fun. And somebody might think, what is this? You know, you got fever? You just got to go see a doctor, or you got to take those pills or whatever. The next day, I was out distributing books. My fever had gone. It was vanquished. Completely gone. Now somebody might say, this is not very hygienic. This is not very nice. Don't you think, you know, this is improper? I mean, like, you spit on this person? That's not very cultured, right? That's not very, you know, acceptable. But he was ready to transgress all these norms in order for the preaching to go on nicely. At other times, we asked him for blessings because he was like our good uncle. We called him Grandfather Bhishma. And even though he has very thin frame, you know, very delicate person, called him Grandfather Bhishma because he's a great warrior in the Sankirtan army of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So always before going out, we went to him to get his blessings. And not just as a matter of routine, you know, like we do so many of our so-called customs. But we really meant it. And we even took his feet and put them on our heads. And said, okay, how much blessing are you giving? And he said, 100 books. And we said, what? Only 100 books? I want to do 200 books. He said, okay, 300 books. Go. And we went out and we did it. Because we believed in the power, in the potency of his blessings. Now you might say, if you put your feet on the head of devotees, especially if they're Brahmins, you go to hell. And he knew that, because he had read more than we had read of the scriptures. But I asked him, and he said, I'm ready to be inconvenienced for the preaching mission. If you all will go out and do big for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada, then I am ready to suffer inconvenience. That is worth it. So much was he determined. Now that created faith in our hearts that this person is for real. This person is not just offering lip service. This person is actually dedicated, is actually sincere. So when we study Srila Prabhupada's life and we see how he came to the West and inconvenienced himself greatly to give everybody Krishna consciousness, our faith increases. Just like I heard that Srila Prabhupada was in Buckner, Pennsylvania at the home of Sally and Gopar Agarwal, and she organized preaching arrangement at the YMCA at the youth hostel. And from there, he got invited also to Slippery Rock College, which is nearby, to speak. And later on, 25 years later, His Holiness Raghunath Swami, he went to that college to give a preaching program. And one of the professors said, I remember, your spiritual master came to our college and he gave a program. And, you know, he also sold me a set of Bhagavatams. And
Now, you might think that our preaching or what we do is very original and very new. Sometimes we invent some new lines, some new techniques, some new ways of dealing with people. But then when we hear that Prabhupada has been doing it all before already, much better than we have. Like I tell people, you know, I'm a monk from India, and I've come all the way from India to here, to Melbourne, you know, just to meet all the nice people of this city. Are you one of the nice people? Yes, everybody wants to be a nice guy, right? And then how can you refuse a person who has just traveled, you know, very far? You tell them, I've taken great trouble just to come out here and meet you. And now you look at me like this? Is this your culture? Is this your hospitality? Is this how you treat somebody who has just traveled, you know, for an entire day? And then they take it seriously. So that professor was saying how Prabhupada had told him that he came on a cargo boat from India to America, and he brought these books with him just to give it to all his friends. And that he considers this professor to be one of his friends. How is that for a sales talk? And of course he bought the three Bhagavatams and he put them in the library. And then Radhanath Swami went to the library and those books were still there on the shelf. And the first thing he saw when he walked into this library, there's tens of thousands of books. He immediately saw the Bhagavatams. Have you ever gone to a home of a relative, of a friend or somebody, and they have a huge library, and immediately you can see first canto, Bhagavad Gita, Science of Self-Realization, the books just jumping at you? Have you seen that? The body can immediately see where the books are, right? Why? Because Krishna is saying, hey, I'm here. So he immediately saw the first canto, and he went there, and he opened it, and the book went a little bit crack, crack, and he saw that in these 25 years, nobody had taken them out. These books were just sitting there waiting. And he thought that this is probably the third set of books Prabhupada had distributed. You know, he distributed one set of books to Captain Pandey, the ship captain of Jaladura. He gave him $20. Another set he had sold to Sally Agarwal, his host family. And probably the third or fourth set which he distributed was to that college, to that professor. And Maharaj later on sent some of the devotees to that college library to take those books out. And then when it was time to bring them back, they brought the new edition of the first canto. And they asked the librarian, you know, actually these books are very old, but I have the new edition. Would you like to have the new edition? They said, yes, of course, we'd like to have the new edition. So they gave him the new edition and they kept the old ones. That was very historic. So, when you see Srila Prabhupada going through great trouble, through great hardship, in the heat of Delhi, Delhi gets very hot. Have you ever been in the summer in Delhi or in Vrindavan? It can get 50 degrees. Very hot. If you're out just for a long time, it's like, it's too much. And he was there going to tea stalls where people were drinking tea to distribute Back to Godhead magazine. And he was more than 60 years old. And we are in our 20s, 30s, 40s, in the prime of our life. And we're thinking about retirement. Right? Oh, how many years do I have to work? How much money I need in the bank? How many rounds do I have to chant till I can keep afloat? So I can just float in Krishna consciousness. But you know, you don't float back to Godhead. You have to make some endeavor. You have to actually endeavor. So when you see Prabhupada struggling under adverse circumstance, this creates great faith in our heart. So we should be very careful to protect our faith in the instruction of Guru and Krishna. For this is the dearmost treasured thing which we have. And we should protect it. And not invite the highway robbers of lust, anger and greed into our living room. To make a big party in our heart and to destroy that nice garden. But we should always treasure. And we shouldn't think, oh, this is nice stories, this is nice memories, this is nice nostalgia. Yeah, I like to be nostalgic once in a blue moon.
No. This is happening every day. Like yesterday, we went out on Harinam, in downtown Melbourne. And we were doing Harinam, and there was two ladies sitting there on the bench. And they were watching the devotees very closely. And after some time, one lady was saying to the other one, "They're very happy. Can you see?" And the other one was going, "Yeah, you're right. They're very happy." Huh? We're doing Harinam also in Washington, D.C. a few months ago. And there was some middle-aged African-American ladies. And they walked by and they watched the Harinam. And it was like 70 devotees out, you know. Moms and pops and grandparents and kids and, you know, pants and shirts and dhotis and saris and the whole united colors of Hare Krishna, you know. The whole happy family was out there doing Harinam. And the lady, while walking, they didn't want to stop. You know, they walked slowly, but they kept on walking. So she turned to me and she said, "Do you know that you're very happy people? Do you know that you're very happy people?" And I said, "Yeah. And this is why." And boom, 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 I put a book into every one of their hands. I said, "You can give a donation." And they said, "Yeah, sure." And they gave a donation and they kept on walking. Then a security guard came by. He was like mid-40s, African-American, young, strong man. And he came up and he touched me by the shoulder and by the arm. And he said, "You know you're not supposed to do this here?" I said, "Yes." Then he smiled. He said, "Yes, you're not supposed to do this here. But it's okay today." Because it was a pedestrian area, which is part of the mall, you know. And he was a security guard for that mall. So he said, "But it's okay today." And then he went off walking. And later on, he saw me distributing. And he came back and he said, you know you're not supposed to sell these books out here?" I said, "Yes, I know." And he said, "But it's okay today." But, you know, when you do the money thing, you try to keep it a little bit on the low range, you know, a little discreet. Because you see all these cameras, you know, they're watching us right now. So just, you know, keep it cool. I said, "Okay." And he went off. And then later on, an hour later, I saw him walking by and he had a small book in his hand. And I said, "Oh, you know." And he said, "I lived in a temple 25 years or, you know, like that, 30 years ago. I lived in a temple. I know how to cook sabji and halava and rice and this and that." Huh? And just when he touched me on the shoulder, I knew this was like the temple commander, you know, who comes and tells you, "Prabhu, Krishna has been very kind. There is some extra pots for you to wash in the kitchen." You know, that kind of feeling. So, I knew that something is special with this person. So I asked him, "Did he meet Prabhupada?" And he said, "No, I just missed Prabhupada. But I met this other Swami, this, you know, African-American Swami, Bhakti Tirtha Swami. And I read his book, you know, The Spiritual Warrior." He said, "I am a spiritual warrior. And I'm taking care of, you know, my people and all these things out here." And he was very convinced. And you could see he was empowered. There were some young ruffians there who were making nuisance. And he went there and he just chastised them and just cut them right down to size. Till they were little mouse, you know, little mice. And they just left very peacefully. So he was empowered. Why? Because he got touched by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Huh? So, if we want our creeper of devotion to reach the lotus feet of Shishi Radha Vallabha and produce very nice fruits and flowers for their satisfaction, then we have to protect our garden, our creeper of devotion. And that means we keep the mad elephant out, we keep the chainsaw out, we keep all the unwanted elements out, and we water that plant very nicely. By daily hearing and chanting, by studying Bhagavatam, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, means daily. Just like, you know, today, you're going to eat two or three times prasadam, right? We've already made up our mind. Already before we go to the shower, we know, "I'm going to eat two or three times today." It's decided. Come hell or high water. And we're going to figure it out, right? Because we're smart. But how many of us are reading 1 or 2 hours of Srila Prabhupada's books every day? Huh? Now, you don't have to make a show of hands, but you can make an internal commitment. Reading is more important than breathing. If you don't feed your mind, your intelligence, it will drag you out there. Just like when you're in the ocean, you know? And you're playing on the shore and everything's nice and safe. But then if you go out into the water and you think, hey, I'm a very strong swimmer, and all of a sudden you realize there's currents here, you know? Even in the Ganges sometimes. You just get pulled off. And then if you try to fight it, you can't fight it. Huh? It's very difficult to come back. Huh? You have to swim at an angle, you know? You don't go against the current. You swim at an angle. So you don't get so much tired trying to get back. Huh? Very troublesome condition. So the point is, reading is more important than breathing. Now we're very determined to breathe, right? We're very determined to eat and to sleep and to defend ourselves. But how much are we eager to feed our mind and intelligence with Krishna conscious information? And how much are we eager, no, to get that mundane information? It's like in America, they made a survey. 70% of the people who own a BlackBerry, you know, one of those mobile devices, they're checking their messages even before they go to the bathroom. Even before they brush their teeth, they're checking their messages. Now just try it for a week. And you say, I won't check email or SMS or take phone calls before I have chanted my 16 rounds of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And I'm serious. This is not a joke. You try it for 1 week and you see what it does to your japa. This is a laboratory experiment, right? You're all very qualified. Engineers, scientists, scholars, businessmen, students. So you make that laboratory experiment. What is it? 1 week, right? Is it too much to ask? To let the material, you know, the material world will be waiting for you. Even after breakfast. It will still be there. It's not that it vanishes. It will still be there. It's still accessible. All your emails and your SMS and all your important things to do, they will still be there. They will be waiting for you. Very happy that you come and serve them. But try it for 1 week. Huh? To read one chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day. It's not too much to ask. We're asking ourselves, why I'm not feeling inspired? Why don't I have great strength? Why are people not believing when I tell them, hey, this is a great book. Hey, this is something valuable. Why? Because I'm not believing it. Because I'm not taking the medicine. Because I'm not practicing what I preach. That's why they are not convinced. Because I am not convinced. I may be convinced on an intellectual level. I may be convinced on a cultural or social or religious level. But the question is, am I convinced on the level of the heart? Am I convinced on the level of the soul that this is the best thing? Just like a child, when you see, a child is walking on a raised platform and, you know, relative, father, mother is there. And the child just jumps. You ever see? If nobody catches him, he will get severely hurt. Huh? But that faith is there. That mom or dad, they're going to catch me, right? And now we're walking on the fence, you know, Tatashta. We're walking on the fence of the shore and we're putting our toe into the water and testing it out. Oh, is it a nice temperature? Is it feeling nice? Is this Krishna consciousness moving for real? Huh? Am I getting some nourishment? Am I getting some pleasure? Am I getting some taste here? Yes. Well, we're still just putting our little toe inside. But we're not jumping. Why? Because our heart is not jumping. towards Krishna. We still think, oh, I've got it figured out, you know. Worst comes to worst, I still got some money in the bank. I still have all my stuff at my parents' house. Huh? I still have plan B, you know, plan B. If this doesn't work out, I have, you know, plan B. Or we should have plan C, you know, Lord Chaitanya. Huh? And how do we get plan C? By engaging in TLC, you know, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, or tender loving care, TLC. We all need tender loving care. So if you feel that this Vaishnav Sangha is giving me tender loving care, then we'll be able to jump. Otherwise, when it's time to go on that big journey and leave this body, we'll still be attached and think, no, I'm going to stick around for a little longer. Huh? I want to see the encore. I want to see, you know, the next show. Maybe I can even stay in the movie theater without having to pay for another show, you know? Huh? How about that for a change, right? And I know you're smiling, and most of us have done it, huh? Because that's the way of the material world. But we got news for you. There's no free rides. There's no free lunch. The Japanese have a saying that there's nothing as expensive as a free gift. Huh? You ever gotten something for free and later on you pay dearly? Huh? Like that one person gives you something and then you have to be there and they chew your ear off, you know? And you go like, oh my God, oh my goodness. Why, you know, why haven't I just gone to the store and paid the money? Or you get a gift and then that thing owns you. You don't own the thing, but the thing owns you. Like all our toys, you know? They own us. Because we are their servants. We have to service them. We have to keep them in good shape. Like yesterday, I saw a young boy. He was carrying a big cardboard box with his skateboard inside. And I said, what happened, you know? You going to go and get a new skateboard? Or he said, no, this is just protection, you know? This is just the way how I take care of my skateboard. Like that. And I thought, this is ironic, you know? We're all carrying our old beat up skateboards around in big cardboard boxes. And people go like, what's he doing? What's she carrying around? You know, like that. And we're very proud of all our stuff. Like you drive around in any city of the world and you see everywhere, you know, storage, mini storage, maxi storage. Customized storage, this storage, that storage, right? Because everybody got so much stuff that their garage, their attic, and their basement, and their rooms, everything is full of stuff. And that's why they have no time. And they have no disposition to deal with Krishna. Huh? And when you give them Bhagavad Gita, they go like, oh, no, keep it, you know, otherwise I have to dispose of it. Huh? It's wasted on me. But they're running around all day in the city trying to get more stuff. But we have to get rid of all the stuff which is between our ears, in our mind and in our heart. So we actually get some space for Krishna and his pastimes and his activities. So let us remember the example of Srila Prabhupada, the previous Acharyas and the present day Acharyas and all the Vaishnavas and engage in their service. And in this way, we can achieve all perfections. All these mystic perfections, they're granted as a side product, you know. But you don't even want them. They're not even cherishable. They're not even, you know, they're not even interesting to a devotee. Because a devotee only strives to get Krishna's mercy, to see Krishna happy. And even if it means momentarily that I am not so happy, then let Krishna's happiness and my distress be my happiness. Huh? And we have all experienced that it's possible. Have you ever noticed you've been in a physically or psychologically very challenging situation where everything was going against the actual norms of behavior, but still, because you were doing it for Krishna, there was great taste and it was great faith and there was great joy and happiness. in that activity? We have all experienced that. Like one time I was distributing books in Vevey on the Lake of Geneva in Switzerland, and it was in the December marathon, and it was snow rain, you know, from the side. You know that mixture of snow and rain? When it's so wet, and then it's wind, so it comes from the side. So even holding an umbrella will not save you. So at one point, like after half an hour of trying to fight with your stack of books and your umbrella and trying to distribute, you just give up and you say, today I'm going to be wet. Hmm? We were in Boston now on the work tour in America, and it was just raining all day, like torrents of rain, like monsoon rain. And what you can do is you just wear sandals and shorts, and it's like, you know, swimming in a lake. The only thing, you have to make sure the books don't get wet, or not too much, so they don't fall apart, they don't disintegrate. And then you knock on people's windows, and you go, hello, hi. It's a beautiful day out today, isn't it? And they think, like, either this person is crazy, or something is special with this person, you know? Thanks for coming out here. You know, you just thank people for being out here, for experiencing this great experience out here, you know? It's tremendous. Thank you for coming out here. And they're like, wow, they feel very special. You know, everybody wants to feel special and distinct. And then you give them the book and they take it and then you give a donation. And I did 300 Mahabik books on that day. And it was one of the most blissful days I've had. Huh? Materially speaking, there have been nicer days in my life on Sankirtan. Huh? But all these nice days, you don't remember them. But 20 years later, that day, you still remember. I remember one person, he pulled up there in the same town and he looked at the books and he said, this looks very, very interesting. And he gave me the biggest bill which we have in Switzerland. It's a $1,000 note. And he gave me $1,000. Just like that for a few books. He just saw that this was, you know, sometimes you have a moment, you know, with a person, and that person just really gets it, you know, what's going on here. And it's so deep and so intense, it almost blows them away, you know. You ever notice that? When you're really trying to give yourself, and you really try to connect with that person on the level of the heart. And then they ask, well, how much should I give? And then you say, usually people give their lives, you know. But if you can't give your life, you know, then just give $1,000. If you can't do that, then just give whatever you can give. There's no minimum, but more important, there is no maximum. Huh? And he just took the full set. He was very happy, very appreciative. So Prabhupada was touching people's lives. It wasn't a marketing strategy. One time they had a big Guru Puja in Mayapur, and hundreds of devotees were there, and everybody was chanting and dancing Jai Prabhupada. And Prabhupada saw one devotee, he had a bandage on his foot. So he called him over. And while the whole Guru Puja was going on and everybody's chanting and dancing, being totally ecstatic about Prabhupada, Prabhupada talked to this devotee and asked him, what happened? He said, oh, I got a cut, it got infected. It will be alright. Prabhupada said, no, it will not be alright. You have to go and buy medicine. So he took money from his own kurta and gave it to that devotee and told him, you go to the shop and you buy that particular medicine and you take care of it. And that devotee is still a devotee today. And he remembers that. One time Prabhupada in Los Angeles, he came out of the temple and there was many sannyasis and big kirtan and everybody was jai. And Prabhupada saw one lady with her young baby. And he walked over to her and he asked her, how's the baby? Is the baby eating well? What's the name of the baby? Like that. And that lady is still a devotee today. And she said, over all these decades, I have kept my vows and I've kept on going in Krishna consciousness because I saw that Prabhupada cared. He cared about me. He cared about my baby. And he was really concerned, you know. It wasn't just, okay, you know, let's cut the ribbons and kiss the babies and, you know, throw some flowers. Because it's good for PR, you know. Okay, the photos are taken. Okay, photos are finished. Alright, let's go on. Let's carry on with business, you know. Alright, here. Take it back. You know?
Yuck.
No. Prabhupada understood the heart and the mind of that person. So he was giving himself freely. So the question is, are we ready to extend? Are we ready to give ourselves? Or are we still sitting on the fence, watching, putting our toe in the water? Oh, it's not the perfect temperature. But you know, I got news for you. It will never be the perfect temperature. I've been around the world. I've been in some very fancy places. And there's very few countries where you actually get the perfect mixture of hot and cold. Usually, you know, just by the way how it's set up, either you get, you know, you get cooked alive, or you freeze, right? So you have to take your pick. Now cold is more, you know, is more nice than getting burned. So usually we go for that one. So that's the material world. It's always slightly imperfect. Right? Even though you may be in a 5-star hotel, but still you go to the bathroom and you see the finishings, you know, how they put in the sink and the bathtub and everything, and you realize, we're still in the material world. They're charging 20,000 rupees for this place a night, you know? Well, we're still in the material world. You still can't mix hot and cold at the same time. It only still either goes cold or hot. Or somebody uses the flush, the toilet next door, you know? Then all of a sudden, because all the cold water goes there, you only get hot water. You get burned. We've all experienced these things, right? Welcome to the material world. It is always slightly imperfect. If you want perfection, if you want beauty, if you want strength, if you want knowledge and renunciation, there's only one place to go. Shishi Radha Vallabha. They have it. They've got it in full, in completeness. And by serving them, whatever Krishna grants us as his prasad will rub off on us. And sometimes it may mean a little difficulty, and sometimes it may mean a little ecstasy. But we're not getting too depressed or too elated or too despondent. Well, we're just hankering for more. We just want more. Because this is what we're striving for. So let's follow Rupa Goswami's teachings and Srila Prabhupada's example and create an environment where each and every one of us feels safe to reveal their hearts and their minds and feels that this is not just, you know, a nice experience, but this is actually my life. This is actually how I want to live and how I want to die and how I want to continue serving Krishna for eternity. Thank you very much. O Guru Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.